I'll admit, for season one of Surfing the Quicksand, I thought I would do a lot more of the solo casts, just me talking to you, than I think I have. Part of that is because I've had some amazing guests this year, and I didn't want to put off sharing a great episode with a compelling guest and a compelling story for just a conversation with me. But today I think I'm due. One of the things I wanted to do was reflect a bit on the Midlife Leap series that I do. You've noticed that I've interviewed a few people where what I wanted to bring to you was the idea of reinvention for women in their 40s and 50s when life zigged or zagged, or they were burnt out, or an opportunity fell in their lap. Whatever might have been the case, they were able to reinvent themselves. And I always hope that these stories are interesting and inspiring and educational, and I know they always are for me. But what I wanted to talk about is the idea that as a career coach and resume writer, I work with people all the time who are just looking to do things a little different for their future. Maybe not a full leap, but a shift or a pivot, a slight pivot with a lowercase p, something that feels different for their future because they're looking at their past and they've been in their career for 20, 25, 30 years. And they're looking at their future and realizing, oh, I'm not at the finish line. I still have another 10, 15, 20, 25 years to go before I kind of give up on working. But I know that what I want from work is going to shift, needs to shift. Maybe it's because you're burnt out, or really your industry or profession has changed since you first set out on this journey. Maybe it's there's a layoff or a change going on with working from home versus working in the office that feels untenable or at the very least undesirable. Maybe it's just realizing that what got you inspired and passionate into this space maybe wasn't what you were going to do for 40 years. It was good for 20. It's good for 25. But is it good for another 20? So I'm often talking to people in their 40s and 50s who are saying, help me think through and plan for my future. I think these conversations often come in a way that feels like a luxury to people, right? They don't often say, I'm going to go invest in an hour of somebody else's expertise and time to explore my future. Most people put that off. Most people don't invest in something like that. So I know when somebody's coming to me, it's because they've thought about it a lot already. They've already stared at the ceiling at night, wondering about their future. They've already been kind of racking their own brain to figure out what might be a path forward. They've already been talking to the people that they know and know them really well and they trust for their opinions. So when somebody gets to me, they've done a little thinking. They've done a little agonizing. They've ruled some things out. I like to get to know somebody on that process and help them explore big pathways forward. And not just, okay, what am I going to do and how am I going to do it? Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes we've narrowed in very specifically into doing that. One of my favorite stories around that as a career coach was working with somebody who had taken kind of an early retirement package. She was about 50. She had taken an early retirement package from a technology company, knew she still wanted to work. She had recently been divorced. She was raising a daughter mostly on her own. And she was kind of figuring out what was next. We talked about her career and her skills and her strengths. And it came up in conversation that something she always wanted to do way, way, way in the future, maybe someday, is own a bed and breakfast, an inn in Maine or somewhere in New England. And I said, let's talk about that. What's going on there? And I'm going to tell you, within a year, she owned an inn in Maine and loved it, right? So again, they're not always like that. But when I'm talking to somebody, I'm listening for What is going on? What is a dream? What is an interest? What's a strength or a skill you love? And how can we help you build a next journey around some of those things? Sometimes it's also coming along with things like I need more flexibility in my life, parenting, taking care of aging parents, being able to say we need a different kind of financial support, or we're more comfortable financially than I thought we'd be at this point, so I can take a step back and not have to go after the career growth that I've had all this time. Maybe I can make some changes on things. Maybe it's mental health. Lots of different reasons why you might be looking at something that says, I can be or I need to be a little creative about what comes next. And maybe talking to somebody is going to help unearth that for me. I never tell people what they should be doing. I'm not one of those career coaches that says, "Oh, let's take a test and I'm going to be able to tell you what you should be." I'm not the fortune teller in that way. But what I like to do is ask questions that help us figure out what some possible, again, big pathways might be. Let's talk about what I mean by big pathways. Three come to mind are the most common that I'm talking to people about. The first is niche expertise. The second is commitment to service. And the third is a portfolio career. Now, that's me, and I'll talk about me and my portfolio career when we get there. But these are areas where you're saying, if I'm going to focus on just a trajectory forward, what is going to be the engine behind not just the what I'm doing, but also how I'm doing it, how I'm bringing work into my life a little differently than it's been. So, niche expertise. This is the idea that for so many of us in a 20 or 30 year career, we've done so many different things, maybe even all within the same profession or field, but we've done different things, different projects, worked for different companies, worked in different timelines on those companies. And along the way, we're pretty sure we know what we hated. I almost never have to pry too hard to find out, okay, what don't we want to do anymore? What's not in your future? But the idea of what if we were to get really narrow around what you've been doing, what you're good at, what you like doing, what people value, how narrow could we get in understanding that, such that we might open brand new doors that hinge on that one fact. So an example might be, I talk to a lot of people who have interest and skills and capabilities and experience in project management. Project management is really broad, and project management can be just kind of every day I'm managing a project, or it can be I'm managing multi-million dollar projects. This is what I do. Project management covers a lot of different tasks and a lot of different skills. And so I like to talk to people to say, all right, what part of project management are you good at? Do you love? Have you had the most success with? Like, well, what do you mean? I'm project management. No. Project management is lots of different things, right? It can be scoping out the project. It can be managing how the project goes from phase to phase. It can be reporting out to stakeholders and executives about how things are going. It can be dealing with snafus and helping to take care of things that go askew. It is influencing people who do not report to you that they are going to do the things they're supposed to do so that we're all in timeline. There's so many different, and more than that, right? But there's so many different aspects to project management. So I'll talk to people, which part do you love? Which part do you think you're best at? Which part, when somebody hears you're the project manager, does everybody else say, oh, thank God she's here. She's going to make sure this happens, right? The more narrow we can get at understanding what you're good at, what you love to do, where you've had success, the easier it is for us to take that and say, what else could you do with that? Who else would value that? Where else can you apply that skill and that strength? We talk about transferable skills, and that's what that means, right? So I like talking to people about understanding what their skills and their strengths are. And often it's really hard to come into a meeting and be like, "Hi, Kathy, so nice to meet you. Here are my 12 best strengths," right? It takes some work, and I do that work with them because it's really easy for us to forget that what we're great at comes easy to us. And because it's easy to us, we don't recognize that it's hard for others. And so we play down, or we ignore it, or we forget it exists. So I love taking people through that conversation when we're trying to say, how narrow can we get? Because if we can figure out, oh, you know what I'm best at is I'm really great at presenting status reports to stakeholders, getting them along and telling them a story, helping them understand what's at risk, and walking them through solutions I've already vetted for them. Oh, well, that's interesting. Who else needs that? What are the skills that go into that? Is that communication? Is that designing a great PowerPoint? Is that risk management and being able to put things into really, really easy and accessible terms that anybody can understand, not just the experts working on the project itself? The more narrow we go, the more we find your niche, the easier it is for us to say, if you could build a career, if you could build half a career around doing just that, how would that feel? What would that look like? What could you do with that? What doors could open for you? So the niche expertise conversation is one that's really built on skill and strength and desire to do just that. That's not going to be for everybody. Some people say, ah, no, I need the variety. I don't want to do the same thing every day. And I'm not talking about routine work. I'm talking about being really deep inside what you're good at. It might be a good example to say, you know, if you were talking about somebody like, oh, I'm an artist. Okay, I'm an artist. Well, I love working with paint. Okay, I love working with paint. Well, I love oil paint. Okay. Further down, further down, further down. Say, oh, well, could I just do that one thing the whole time? Say, no. Because, oh, turns out what I really love is starting new projects, starting new art projects. Yeah, that's my medium that I love. But, oh, gosh, turns out what I thought I loved is not true. What I thought I loved when I poked harder, I was able to see wasn't right. So that's the other part of the conversation we have, because sometimes people come in thinking they definitely know their strengths and definitely know what they're great at. And then we reveal, oh, maybe it's not what you thought it was. I often will have conversations with people about the environment and the company or organizational life cycle that they're in. Who are you working for? Who are you working with? What's the beneficiary? Who's the beneficiary of your work? To really try and explore, are my assumptions about what I like and what I'm good at just what I've been telling myself, or just what I've been getting on performance reviews all these years? Or is it really something else? And I need to work with a career coach or a partner, a thought partner to help me think through that. The next one is commitment to service. Now, this one feels a little bit more obvious. And to be fair, comes up most often with people who feel financially comfortable to take a step back. Because what's the biggest assumption? That if it's an organization that's worthy, it's probably a nonprofit. And if it's a nonprofit, it probably doesn't pay, right? That's our assumption. First of all, not both of those things have to be true, right? You can get involved with a cause or platform or a principle you believe in or an organization that you think benefits that isn't necessarily a nonprofit. And further, it could be a nonprofit, and it doesn't necessarily mean it isn't going to pay well for the skills and the strength and the leadership that it needs. So what's an example? I want to give you an example first of where there may be a commitment to service and what I mean by that. So let's talk about that first. Commitment to service is going to be things like, I want to work with kids. I want to work with veterans. I want to work with my church. I want to work with animals. I want to help rebuild my community. I want to help work with senior citizens, right? We start to imagine the people that we think could use some help. And we believe it's really tied well into our values, such that we'd be willing to compromise, maybe compensation, maybe scope of role, in order to say, no, what's more important to me at this stage is that I serve. Maybe it's as an employee or a volunteer, maybe it's on a board, maybe it's as a consultant. Again, kind of getting into niche expertise. Maybe you're doing one thing very particularly that other organizations can benefit from. But the idea is around saying what's most important to me at this stage is meaning. Meaningful organizations, meaningful causes that I'm willing to get up every day or multiple days a week and serve. Maybe that's public service, elected officials. Maybe it's something that just feels like, again, you're going to do your skill to help benefit somebody else. I'm going to tell you, this won't be a surprise to many of you, one of the biggest skills and strengths and niche expertise that lots of nonprofits or organizations that are built around a mission or cause can would value is fundraising, right? And I don't mean you should donate to them. I mean, if you are somebody who's really good at fundraising, boy, organizations will pay for that expertise because they need it and they can leverage your salary much further, or at least that's the hope. Strategic planning is another great example of where a niche expertise but a commitment to serve can come together such that you can get paid well to do the thing you're great at. But again, some of you are going to say commitments to service to me is more around the people I'm working with, the cause I'm serving, doing interesting work or work I see that I can sustain for a while around a mission that I believe in. So for some of you, that second pathway, commitment to service, is going to be what helps you explore, all right, how do I do that? Who do I want to do it with? What would I do? How do I sell myself? What are those transferable skills from my very different career that I'm going to bring up that I think those organizations will value and care about? That's that work around transferable skills. Again, I just talked about it in terms of the niche expertise. It's another area of questions that we'll go through, right? Where do you do your best work? Where can you get lost for hours? And I don't just mean like binge watching Bravo, right? Where can you get lost for hours? Because chances are you're in a happy place where you're doing some great work. I'll give you an example of me with that question. My friends know that one thing I love is jigsaw puzzles. I love jigsaw puzzles, and I can get lost for hours in a jigsaw puzzle. My back doesn't support that hobby so much anymore, but my brain sure does. Now, if somebody tells me they're good at jigsaw puzzles, I'm interested because I want to talk about why, and I want to talk about where have you seen that same focus and interest and joy show up in your professional career? Because chances are it has. I think about myself and one of my first jobs, I was working at Dow Jones with the Wall Street Journal, and this is, early mid 90s. And they referred to me. I was working in the HR department, in the benefits department, and my colleagues referred to me as the benefits detective. I loved when somebody said, huh, this is weird. I wonder what's going on here. I'm like, ha, let me at it. I want to find out whether that was a systems issue or a form issue or a human issue, whatever that is. I love saying, wait, there's something that's stumping people. I wonder if I can help. And I'm probably not going to stop until I do. I think being a jigsaw puzzler is also why I love professional organizing. I'm so good at space, looking at a space and saying, why does that go there? Why did you put that here? What if we put this over here? I think jigsaw puzzling and space relations are highly related as well. If somebody tells me, oh my God, I could get lost in my garden all day, Great. Tell me more about that. Tell me, and I don't want to know just about when you're in the garden. I want to know when you're thinking about your garden, what are you thinking about? What are you planning? What are you imagining? What do you think you're going to be spending your time on? And I don't even mean, gosh, I'm planning my garden work for tomorrow. I mean, I'm planning my garden for next year, and I've got long range plans, right? I want to hear when somebody tells me what they can get lost in for hours, what that is. Because in that, I bet we can find what some of those skills and preferences and desires are. I kind of mentioned another one a little while ago, right? What is that thing that when people find out you're on the job, they say, ah, oh, thank God she's here. Now I know this will happen, right? Where do you inspire confidence in other people just because you're on the job? What are those things? What are the things people seek you out for help with? Now, sometimes that answer is going to be an answer you don't love, right? Ugh. Well, they always ask me to help when the system's down, and I just hate it, and I hate being in that system. Like, okay, what if we were to pull back a little? Yes, that's a specific knowledge that you have, but maybe it's also in the how, right? You're approachable. You explain things in a way that people get. You're relentless and you'll work to help figure out something else when they come to you and say, this isn't working. And you look and see yourself and say, oh my gosh, that's unexpected. Let me figure this out. Right. So, understanding what people seek you out for can be a really good clue into understanding what your strengths and your transferable skills are. So, when we're talking with someone about that commitment to service pathway and they say, Kathy, I've been in financial analysis for 30 years. I'm not going to go. That's not the work I want to do. I want to work with people. I want to help people. I want to work one-on-one or with small groups, and I want to do that work. Great. Let's figure out what the assets are from what you've been doing for 30 years that someone else who's hiring or approving volunteers for that kind of role is going to say, oh, huh, I wouldn't have looked at your resume and thought of that. But now that I see it written in a different way, that's really relevant. I want to help people understand that story, figure out how to tell that story for themselves, both in interviews and networking, but also on paper in their resume or their LinkedIn profile. It really is fun for me to help unlock some of these things for people. Finally, I mentioned portfolio career as a third big pathway, and I said, that's me. So what does that mean? A portfolio career is I'm not going to do just one thing. I'm going to do at least two things, but maybe more. And certainly that's me, right? I tell people I'm a career coach and resume writer and professional organizer and a speaker and an author and a podcaster now. I do a lot of different things. I worked in the elections function in my city for almost 10 years. I've done so many different things and at the same time, or balance them amongst each other. So first of all, I want to talk about why somebody might want a portfolio career. It may be really practical. What I want to do is not a full-time job, or I can't afford for it to be a full-time job. I still need to earn money in a different capacity, or the way to do it is just not, I can't do that from here or from this home or whatever that is. A portfolio career can also be a function of phasing in or phasing out. Well, I think I'm winding down from what I'm doing, and it's going to be part-time for a few years. And so while I'm doing that, I want to earn money somewhere else. I want to start building something else, right? So it could be a pathway. I think a portfolio career can also be about tempering for highs and lows across industries and energy and seasons, right? So I went to this. For many, I've been a member of, you've heard me mention NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. I've been in that industry and that professional association for 13 years since I started my business. And in my first year, the end of my first year, I went to my very first conference, and I love the NAPO conference. And I went to a session called How to Be in Business Beyond Year 10. Now, again, I just finished year one, and I thought, oh, I think I need to be in that room. I think I need to hear what people who are getting close to year 10 are thinking about and worrying about. And one of the things that came up was about a portfolio career and saying, or I'll just say portfolio, not necessarily career, but a portfolio of revenue, right? You need to have multiple streams of revenue because why? You're an organizer. If you're physical, you're in physical spaces, you could get hurt. Injuries can definitely happen in my industry. You get burnout, right? It can be heavy and it can be an emotional space. Especially, I don't work with people with hoarding tendencies, but those folks, you can imagine that it's a big ask for emotional and psychological support in those spaces. The economy can shift, right? Professional organizing might feel like a luxury, and if the economy's bad, people cut back on luxury items like that. So all of these reasons saying, oh, how do you think about offsetting, balancing, providing multiple opportunities to do your work, to earn money, to scratch some itches, right? So I love speaking. And honestly, before the pandemic, I did a lot more speaking and travel speaking. That's just not what my life looks like right now. So the idea, like, okay, I guess I have to pivot to virtual speaking or pivot to a podcast or look at speaking in a different way. But I still have a little bit of that in my portfolio because I love doing it. I love this time with you. So how do I still make that a part of how I'm spending my time, how I'm earning my money, how I'm developing other parts of my business without it having to be what I do full time? And believe me, there are people who that's what they do. They speak full time. Organizing for me is another great example, right? I love doing it, but I knew 10 years ago that it's a very physical job and I wasn't sure. I used to tell people, I said, gosh, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be able to clean out basements and out from underneath tween beds. Now, I still do a little bit of both of those and both recently, but ooh, my body isn't going to hold up for that long. And I'm going to tell you, I know hundreds of organizers who are doing much more physical work than I do. And they're doing it till they drop. God love them. But for me, I knew I don't think it makes sense for me to build a full-time focus around that. Not to mention, how do you think about earning and revenue and working one-on-one with people? You're only earning money in a particular way. Okay. Does that make sense for me and my life and my goals? Maybe not. Career coaching and resume writing is something that's huge, huge in my world. And it's something I think people who meet me on the street don't know. I can get recognized in Melrose a lot as Clever Girl. Lots of people have no idea I do this work, and I probably do more of it than anything else, this career coaching and resume writing. So for me to say, oh, that I call that, I used to call that resume writing, I used to call it my pajama work, right? I could do it at 2 in the morning if I didn't sleep. I can work on a resume. I could do it, take a call from somebody sitting on my couch in my pajamas, and I could do great work. And I'm good at it and I love doing it, right? So that became part of how I wanted to do. But here's what I also learned. It's really hard for me to work on more than 3 resume clients in a week. Too many stories in my head. I'm spending hours and hours on their resumes. And if I have too many stories in my head that I'm trying to get clear on all at once, I get overwhelmed. I'm not doing great work. I'm getting confused. So I can't build a full-time job around I need 10 clients a week because my brain can't do that work. So this is that idea of that portfolio for me was how do I bring in things that I like doing in a way that fits my skills, fits my financial needs, fits my time, fits my energy management, works with the economy, for good or for bad. When the economy gets tough, people do invest a little bit more in resumes or career coaching, especially if they're not investing in organizing, right? So they offset each other a little bit. The idea of the pandemic impacting a speaking profession and then being able to say, well, I can do virtual, I can do Zoom, I can do a podcast, I can do something else. I've had to be flexible, but it also suits me. I like doing different things. I like working with different people. I like helping to solve different problems. I know that about myself. So I know that a portfolio career has been a way for me to piece things together. And it's got some seasonality to it, right? Which is also helpful. And I mentioned seasonality because think about this. you could have this interest, like gardening. Like, I'm going to do garden planning on the side, or I'm going to do, I love present wrapping, and I'm going to start a present wrapping business for November and December of the year. You might have something that you love, that people value, can make you money, that you're good at, and it could be part of how you build for your future. And you can do it a little at a time, a year at a time. I think that's the other nice thing about thinking about a portfolio career is it lets you be flexible. The pieces of the pie don't always have to be the same size. This could be the season of your year because it's when people care about it, that you're focusing on something and then say, I'm going to shrink it another part of the year. My Clever Girl Organizing Challenge, I launch marketing in November. We are doing a ton of, I'm doing a ton of behind the scenes work in November, December. We launch in January. We wrap in March. And so for 5 months, I have a lot of focus on that, which means other things kind of shrink, but that's okay because that's the season. So again, be able to think about how do I ease into what might come next for me might be around. Is there more than one thing you'd like to do? Is there something you'd like to start trying while you whittle down or right size what your career looks like right now? Quite frankly, if you're somebody who hasn't been great with setting boundaries around your time, or how you've let your current professional life encroach on every other part of your life, maybe introducing a new little slice of pie is a great gain in helping you get back some of the things you really need in managing the rest of your life. I hope these ideas of thinking about what might come next maybe struck a little light bulb for you about something you've been thinking about or something that's just occurred to you or something you've observed in someone else. Again, not necessarily the big midlife leaps where I've gone and went, somebody's gone something really different. My shift came, I was 42 when my shift came. I'd been laid off. I'd been in HR for 20 years. If you'd asked me 5 years earlier, I would not have thought that at 20 years I was going to leave a career that I thought I was going to do when I was 15, right? I spent my whole life thinking I was going to do this. But it was time for me. And I also knew I could experiment. I could try some things. If it didn't work out, I could go back to HR. I have a huge, huge amount of experience. People would take me back. I'm not sure they would today after 13 years, and I don't want to. But what I was able to do was take career coaching and resume writing, being able to help people understand their strengths and their performance and their experience and their stories that I loved doing. I loved helping managers figure out how to themselves be more productive with their time and balance things on their plate. I get to do that every day with productivity coaching in my organizing business. I love that I've been able to take the best of what that career was and say, how can I keep it in my life and turn it into something that I can share with others for free, for not for free, whatever that was going to be. So you might be looking at your career right now, and it isn't just about what am I going to do after I retire, but I do a lot of those conversations too. I'm talking to people about, oh, so you want to be on boards? How do we talk about that? What are the skills and experiences you need in the next 5 years in your job that are going to help you be considered for a board experience? That's an interesting conversation to have with people. You want to transition to a nonprofit life? You want to transition to a completely different career, something that looks like it's really about fun and creativity and a personal side of you that has nothing to do with what you've been doing professionally for years. Let's talk about that. So I love doing that work, not just for people who are thinking about what's my third act? What comes after this? But even people who are willing to say, I'm in my 40s, I'm 52, 55. Like, I got plenty of work ahead of me. And I don't think it's doing what I've been doing all this time. And if I don't talk to somebody about this and start imagining a plan, will I lose the opportunity to make a shift when I need to or when that doorbell rings? I love helping people figure out their story, figure out their future, help them understand what's inside them. Again, I don't tell them what they should be doing. I'm not somebody who's going to say, here's the menu. Let's pick what you should do. But I do know that some people need a thought partner in understanding what that is. And some people might need a resume writer or an interview prep coach to help them show up best when they're ready to put those feet forward into that direction. If you've got someone in your life that you think is ready to talk to me, or if that's you, I hope you will kind of reach out and see what we might talk about. I offer free consultations for this all the time. But at the very least, what I most hope you got from this episode was thinking about what do I imagine my future is when it comes to work? I'm going to say lowercase w, right? I'm probably not retiring at 55 and going to go hang out on a beach the whole time. We're all living a lot longer. And we might find that boring, or we might miss being in an environment where we have colleagues or people need things from us, or we keep learning, right? There's so much about what we get out of having a professional life often that turns out we miss once we don't have it. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Kathy Bynes, and I'm so glad that you are surfing the quicksand with me.